9:10 here on the Big 550 KTRS. You are in for a treat. Not only is one of the biggest topics coming up in the next session down in Jefferson City going to be whether or not the state of Missouri should do away with the corporate income tax, but one of the most interesting people is here in studio, and we have a chance to talk with him. And I believe, Rex, it's your second time on the show, your first time with me.
That is correct. The first time was with Rick Edlund.
Right. Who threw softballs at you the whole time. So we're going to be a little tougher with you this go-around. Also sitting next to you is Patrick Ishmael, who is a policy analyst with the Show Me Institute, a think tank in which you started, correct, Rex?
I was a co-founder. There were Crosby Kemper III and Mike Podgursky, former chair of the econ department at Mizzou. The three of us co-founded it.
And the reason was why?
Well, we didn't have a free market think tank in Missouri, and almost every state did. We were the largest state in the country to not have a free market think tank. And several years before I left Dimensional Fund Advisors, about 2004, having dinner with Crosby Kemper III, former CEO of UMB Bank, and we got to talking, and I said, you know, one of the things I really want to do, Crosby, when I retire, is to set up basically a Cato Institute for Missouri. And Crosby said, I've been thinking of exactly the same thing. This was at a dinner at Starker's in Kansas City on the plaza. And I said, well, why don't we do it? And that's when I confided to him that I probably wouldn't be at Dimensional Fund Advisors more than a year and a half. And so we got started.
And a lot of people think it is a conservative think tank. You call yourself a libertarian. It's more of a free market hands-on.
It's totally free market. Conservative is a word that is just sometimes it's a pejorative, but it's heavily tainted. It has all sorts of baggage that comes with it. So it's not a very useful word. It's just an example of poor diction because it implies social positions and things like that. So we're strictly free market. We're looking for public policy changes that use free market solutions. That's all it is.
And you call yourself a libertarian more than anything, do you not?
I'm a free market guy. I don't even use the L word.
All right, fair enough. Good. Next to you is Patrick Ishmael. Patrick, you wrote a policy paper about Missouri and the idea of Missouri doing away with the corporate income tax.
Right. With my partner in crime, Mike Rathbone, we talked about easy ways to convert from a system where we kind of pick winners and losers to one where everybody kind of wins.
Okay. What is the corporate income tax today in the state of Missouri?
It's about 6%, and so what we would do is we would move from it's 6.25%. We would move from a rate that is really it's too high. I think that when you're talking about destructive taxes, the corporate income tax is among the most destructive that you can impose on a state, on a country, if you're looking for growth.
Is that 6% flat? In other words, everybody pays it no matter what.
It's a flat rate. It's not graduated up.
So if you are incorporated in Missouri and your enterprise rent a car, you pay 6%. And if you're KTRS Radio, you pay 6%, and there's no getting around it.
There, unless you're talking about tax credits and other ways to avoid those taxes, you're going to be paying that rate.
Right. Kansas has virtually done away with their corporate income tax, correct?
No, they've done away with a large part of their personal income tax. And this is a very important topic. Kansas just dropped the atom bomb on Missouri, and it was absolutely brilliant what the governor there and the General Assembly did, and courageous. They took their top rate, which was 6.5%, and now keep in mind we're talking about the personal income tax, but the two sort of blend together. They took the top rate from 6.5% to 4.85%. That was the small part of what they did. The big part of what they did is for all pass-through entities, S-corps, LLCs, partnerships, which is about 80% of all corporations in the country, they said all profit distributions from those companies will now be taxed at zero. But they still have the corporate income tax on what are called C-corps. And these letters refer to chapters in the IRS code. A C-corp is like Boeing is a C-corp. If you're a large company and you have to accumulate a lot of capital, you've got a lot of plant and equipment, you have to be a C-corp, which means you pay taxes at the corporate level, and your shareholders only pay taxes if you pay out dividends. An S-corp or an LLC pays no taxes at the corporate level, but the shareholders are taxed on all of the profits, whether they are distributed or not. That's most of the businesses in this country. Kansas said those distributions are now taxed at zero, And that is potentially devastating for Missouri, and especially for the west coast of Missouri.
And you say because if you are a carpet cleaning company, an S-Corp, or one of these smaller companies, you're going to incorporate in Kansas because there are no taxes over there.
On your profits, there are no taxes. If you can move, if your customer base doesn't care where you operate or where you're headquartered, they're going to move to Kansas, especially the most profitable ones, because the cost of moving is low relative to what they say on taxes. If you're a small mom-and-pop business and maybe your profits are $25,000 a year, well, you probably can't afford to move because the cost of moving will be too high. But if you're an S-Corp and you make $100 million a year or $50 million, which there are lots of companies like that in Missouri, in the nation, you're moving. Unless there's something about your customer base that says you can't move. But most companies are mobile.
But that's the only reason why? I mean, people, there are companies who incorporate in the city, who live and work in the city, who pay the extra 1% earnings tax because they choose to.
Right.
So taxes and higher taxes is not the only reason why a company is where it is.
Oh, absolutely not. There are many factors. But what's so interesting and potentially devastating is that when Kansas did this, remember, their metropolitan area of Kansas City, Kansas, is part of Kansas City Metro.
Right.
So if you move, in some cases, just a couple blocks,
right,
you move across State Line Road, your taxes on your profits go to zero, and you still get to enjoy all the amenities of a beautiful, culturally rich city, everything. See, that's not the case with, for example, Tennessee, which also has a zero personal income tax, but they don't have a metro area, a big one like Memphis, bordering a metro St. Louis. They border the Boot Heel. That's not as much of a problem for us.
So if we were to do away with this lowering the income tax for these companies and then lowering the personal income tax for people, you're not going to see a whole lot of people move from, say, Southern Illinois because they have to go over the Mississippi River.
I think you would see a ton of people
you
in
would.
All the Southern Illinois cities. Actually, as far as Chicago. In fact, Chicago's losing population now. I lived there for 15 years, and the traffic is so bad that the city is becoming unlivable. You've probably been there, and if you go from downtown Chicago to the airport, you have to allow over 2 hours now in the morning. And that was the reason Dimensional Fund Advisors, when we decided to leave the People's Republic of Santa Monica about 6 years ago, we thought about going back to Chicago where we started, and we thought about it for probably all of 3 or 4 seconds. And said the traffic is horrendous, and so we went to Austin, Texas, where we have no income tax. If Missouri had not had a personal income tax, we would have come to Missouri because my former partner was from Lawrence, Kansas. KU, you heard it. And he said, gosh, I could really see myself in Kansas City. I'd love to be back there, but we want to be in the center of the country for logistical reasons. Why go to a 6% income tax state when you can go to a zero tax state like Texas and still be in the center of the country? It has a huge effect. When people decide to move, they aren't typically going to decide to move because of taxes. They're not going to initiate that move, but it's when they have to move anyway. And businesses relocate all the time. They need more space. So when it's time to move, they go, okay, now we have the cost of moving. Now let's consider all the other places we could go. And that's when taxes play a devastating role.
The argument in Kansas is that not enough people are going to move to increase the tax revenue. There's going to be a drastic reduction in tax revenue, which means we're not going to be able to fund the basic needs of government.
Are you talking about Kansas?
I'm talking about Kansas, yes.
Okay, what they're going to do, this is another part of this brilliant, courageous thing, is next year they are going to take a one-time 9% across-the-board cut in everything, in their budget, because they have to have a balanced budget, as does Missouri, and then they will be in balance. And I think they are going to recover that in a few years just from growth.
So you think everything, every agency, everything that is getting 9% less this year.
Yes.
And then after
2013.
So every state agency, every state organization, every sacred cow is going to have to do with 9% less.
Right.
And then after that,
they're going to grow.
They're going to grow, and they're going to have more money than they know what to do with.
They're going to make this up, I think, in a few years. And they're going to make it up mostly at the expense of Missouri, but not exclusively.
Because Nebraska is going to come in, and Colorado is going to come in, and Oklahoma is going to come in, and all that.
Now, Governor Mary Fallon in Oklahoma has also said that she plans to take their income tax down to zero, as has Brown back in Kansas. He says that 4.85 is only the first step. They plan to take everything down to zero. There's about five or six governors who have said it is their plan to eliminate their personal income tax. Nebraska, Chris Christie of New Jersey. There's a whole group of them. Governor LePage of Maine. I mean, this is a wildfire getting started, and Missouri better get on the stick here.
Now, doing away with the personal income tax and then increasing the sales tax?
How you do that is a different issue. We have discussed a variety of things, and one way to do it, this is getting a little bit into the weeds, would be to have a gross receipts tax on all companies. And if you had a gross receipts tax on all companies in Missouri, every company, large and small, of just 2%, you would eliminate the corporate income tax and the personal income tax. Because a gross receipts tax is something that every company will pass on in the form of a sales or a price increase, which means the ultimate payers of this tax will be 6 million Missourians. It's the broadest possible tax base. And in economics, the adage is the broader the base, the lower the rate. So if we make the base that broad, the rate required is only 2%.
So if you were writing these things, you would want to do away with the you want to do exactly as Kansas does and is doing, or would you want it differently with the corporate tax?
Well, the corporate – Kansas has a corporate tax.
I understand, but
we can eliminate that. Now, to eliminate the corporate tax – that requires no effort in Missouri because we give away these tax credits to a fare-thee-well. Basically, we're giving tax cuts every year to the rich politically connected. But Joe Sixpack, who works every day in the factory, he pays all of his taxes. The connected corporations don't pay because they get tax credits. So we say reduce the tax credits by about $300 million a year, and you can eliminate the corporate income tax in one fell swoop.
So you would want to do away with the 6% corporate income tax?
Yes.
You'd want to do away with the personal income tax.
Yeah, that one you have to do, I think, over time. It has to be phased out.
And you're saying fund the state government through a 2%
general revenue gross receipts tax or net gross receipts tax on all corporations.
On all corporations.
C-Corps and S-Corps.
So McGraw-Millhaven wouldn't pay any taxes. What about the normal sales tax?
That wouldn't change.
Right. And each community could then tax whatever they wanted to.
They can do what they want under existing law. And McGraw-Millhaven would not pay any taxes. Now, subtly, over time, you would, but you wouldn't notice it. You would pay it in the form of slightly higher prices for the goods and services that you pay over a 10-year period, which means basically you wouldn't care. And all the taxes are gone. Your personal income tax is gone. The corporate income tax is gone. And Missouri would start growing like a weed. Right now, we are not growing like a weed. We just are an economic weed. We are at the bottom of the country. We're 47th or 48th, Patrick and Grove, over the last 10 or 15 years. We're dreadful. If there were a 51st place, we'd probably get it.
We're working on it.
What about cigarette taxes? Would they remain low? Would they go away?
Unaffected.
Unaffected. Would you like to see higher cigarette taxes?
The only way I'd be willing to see a little increase in the cigarette tax is if we used the proceeds to chip away at the income tax. Otherwise, no.
What about a gas tax?
The same thing, but I'd keep both of them low so that we're still the lowest in the nation.
So it'd be okay to raise them just as long as you're still considered the lowest.
A little bit, yeah.
All right, I got...
And now
got,
that's not a show-me position. That's just Rex Singfield.
I got Rex to say he's for higher taxes.
No, you didn't. No, I said it would be a complete offset.
Rex Singfield, our guest, also with Patrick Ishmael, just getting started. A lot more to get to with an interesting individual. We'll get to more of his background and where he ended up and how he got to where he is. All that coming up next, 923 on the Big 550 KTRS.
Now live from the Window World Studios, this is The McGraw Show on the Big 550 and KTRS.com.
927 here on the Big 550 KTRS. Thrilled to have our guests here in studio. Patrick Ishmael is a policy analyst with the Show Me Institute. And Rex Singfield, one of the co-founders of the Show Me Institute. Rex, where does this stand with the corporate income tax and the personal income tax? You're going to try and get it through the legislature this year? Are you going to put it to the vote of the people? Where do you think this is going to go?
You know, I don't know what's more difficult, getting this Republican-controlled General Assembly to pass tax reform, or am I putting on a red cape and flying to the moon?
They have a veto-proof majority.
Yes, they do.
They all get elected saying they want lower taxes.
Yes.
And yet they can't agree on how to lower everybody's taxes.
McGraw, last year, the General Assembly could not pass local control for the city of St. Louis. It pulled 74% statewide. Now, if they can't pass that, you know, it makes me go into a state of despair. I'm not optimistic they can do something on tax reform. And now the state does not have a choice. What Kansas did is unbelievable. It's also brilliant. I mean, I admire Governor Brownback. And I'll say, you know, full disclosure, I gave money to help Kansas do this effort. And I'm giving money to Oklahoma to do it as well. I want to do everything I can to pressure Missouri. I think about 95% of the world's supply of inertia is in the General Assembly of Missouri.
Has any other state done what Kansas is doing?
Not to the extent that they've done it. Well, take that back. Alaska in 1970 or 71 eliminated their personal income tax when they discovered oil. And that was done.
So there was extenuating circumstances.
That was the only one. And that was done in large part thanks to the efforts of Art Laffer, the author of The Laffer Curve.
Sure.
Who has been working closely with us in our efforts and who I've known for 40 years and who loves to come to St. Louis because he says St. Louis has the largest Laffer Curve in the world, which is the St. Louis Arch. Boy, that really went over. That was really funny, wasn't it? Talk about
it was a different context. I'm sorry. I had a different file pulled up.
Talk about putting a whole studio to sleep.
I'm with you.
Now, hold on a second here. This one more corporate question. I believe Anheuser-Busch is incorporated in Delaware. And if not, a lot of big corporations are incorporated.
Yeah, but that doesn't
in
make
Delaware.
Any difference.
That doesn't make any difference.
They're taxed where they operate, where their real headquarters is.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. You and your story. You were born in an orphanage here in St. Louis?
No, I was born in St. Louis, in South St. Louis, in St. Anthony's Hospital. I was very young when I was born. And
there you go. Now that's better. That's
just seeing if you're paying attention. No, I went into – my father died when I was 5 and left my mother and 4 children, 2 older sisters, me and my younger brother, Jerry. We were basically financially destitute, and she fell on hard times physically, emotionally, and decided that my brother and I would be better in an orphanage where we were together and where she could visit frequently. And that's why we ended up at St. Vincent's Orphanage in Normandy, 7401 Florissant Road, if anybody's interested.
Still going strong today.
It is going strong. Its purpose is different now. The kids that they get today are in much worse shape than we were. We had 125 kids, and we were just poor. Kids had lost one or both parents. And in some cases, the parents for a time were unable to care for them, and then they get back on their feet, and then the kids would go home. Much different situation. And I wish that kind of organization still existed. In some ways it does, with Covenant House, which takes kids a little bit older, takes children who are living on the street and brings them in. We need more of that kind of stuff.
Is your mother still around?
No. She died in 97.
Okay, so she
at the age of 85.
So you then went from this orphanage, ultimately going to Bishop.
Back home. I went back home to her.
Okay, back home to her. Okay, so
yes.
So you went back to.
And then my brother went back home about a year later. Then I went to Bishop DeBerg High School.
And graduated what year?
In 1962.
1962, and then went off to.
I went to Cardinal Glennon College, which is the Archdiocesan Seminary.
Right.
I was studying to be a bishop, and they said, wait, you have to start at priest. And I go, well, you didn't tell me that when I signed up. So I left there after 3 years, had 2 more years at St. Louis University, worked for 1 year. Got drafted, was sent to Fort Riley, and whose mission, by the way, is to prevent Indian attacks on eastern United States. And when I was there, there was
They've
not a single Indian attack.
There you go, standing a post.
Then I went,
thank you.
Left there and went to the University of Chicago to pursue an MBA.
And then when did you realize you had a mind for numbers and money?
I really gained a lot of self-confidence on the quantitative side of things and the philosophy. Well, in the seminary, I realized I was very good conceptually. I love philosophy. I ended up with majors in philosophy and finance. At the University of Chicago, I gained a lot of confidence in the quantitative side of things and fell in love with what was happening in finance from 1970 to 72. There was a whole revolution taking place. And I said, I'm going to get a job and work on that. And I was very lucky to be able to do that at American National Bank of Chicago, and was very lucky to be able to start the first index fund in the galaxy in 1973.
Explain that. That's Chinese to a lot of people. What's an index fund? How does all that work?
An index fund is basically a portfolio that seeks to mimic the performance of an index, like the S&P 500 index fund. Now they're all over the place. You can go to Vanguard or Fidelity. You can buy an index fund, and it will do exactly what the market does. So if the market falls 10%, you're down 10%. Market's up 50, you're up 50. And these things cost next to nothing to operate.
And what's
it's the way everybody should – this is the way you should invest.
What's the benefit to the investor of getting into this thing that does the exact same thing as the market?
Because it's the most efficient portfolio. And active money managers, you know, the stock pickers, they can't beat markets with any consistency. In aggregate, they fail. And sometimes I like to compare the stock pickers to astrologers, but then I back off because there's no reason to badmouth astrologers.
Oh, now he's going, ladies and gentlemen. Two-drink minimum here at Big 550 KTRS. But you're saying to buy a stock index fund more than just an individual stock?
Absolutely. You shouldn't be buying individual stocks. You should buy these extensively diversified portfolios. The fees are very low. The fees are on the order of 10 or 20 basis points. That's 1/10 or 1/5 of 1% per year. And that's all you pay. And they're going to do better than the whole lot of active managers. They're not going to outperform every manager every year, but across a long period of time, they're going to outperform a high percentage of them.
And you recommend one over another? Are you still involved in yours in some way?
Well, we don't sell to the general public, but we operate a lot of sort of...
Well, why not? It seems like if it's a great idea, why wouldn't you sell to the general public?
You get into all sorts of other regulatory issues that you don't want to hear about. If you have trouble sleeping, then I'll come over to your house sometime and I'll tell you about the regulations
and you'll
doze off quickly.
Sure.
No, we're Dimensional Fund Advisors, an institutional-only money manager, of which there are many in the world. But these index funds cover the world. You can buy an index fund that buys all of the international markets. One portfolio, you could buy the U.S. market. Now you own the world in two portfolios. Next to nothing, it's the most efficient portfolio you can have.
That's Rex Singfield. We'll come back, talk more about tax policy and the future of Missouri, the region, and everything else with an interesting individual. He raised in part in an orphanage, came back to help out St. Louis in his retirement? Are you semi-retired? Are you retired officially?
Well, I'm retired from DFA, but I'm working a lot more now than I ever did.
There you go.
Don't tell my former partner that.
Rex Singfield with Patrick Ishmael, policy analyst with the Show Me Institute. More in a moment on the Big 550 KTRS.
Now live from Studio 550, it's McGraw in the Morning on the Big 550 KTRS.
Rex Singfield, our guest, along with Patrick Ishmael from the Show Me Institute. Rex, one of your brethren in your tax bracket, Warren Buffett, says that taxes are too low and taxes need to be raised and that his secretary pays more percentage of taxes than he does, and that's just not right. What do you say?
Well, her taxes are too high. And otherwise, he's just kind of goofy. He was taking advantage of all legal loopholes. It's the way he invests, and that causes his average tax rate to be low. But taxes are too high across the board. Taxes inhibit growth. And I think they might be going up, which is going to be bad.
Why is it so bad to raise taxes to Clinton-level era on the people who make over $250,000?
Okay, for them, they're going to pay a little more taxes. But the people that really get hurt through that are the people at the bottom and the middle class, because those people, some of them will drop out of the investing class and they'll stop working, they'll stop making investments. That causes a reduction in jobs or the elimination of what could be future jobs. They just stop doing it. So they don't lose their job unless they quit voluntarily, but they're already rich. It's the other people that get hurt.
Closing loopholes, that term they like to talk about, closing loopholes. Smart idea, bad idea?
Well, if they could simplify the tax code, that would be a wonderful thing. And if you did that, you would close a lot of loopholes. You'd eliminate a lot of deductions. That would be fine as long as they lowered the rates. You know, ideally, we should be able to do our taxes on a postcard. It's just insane, our tax code.
Well, first of all, that's one of the things we totally agree on, because I don't know what I'm doing. I hand it off to somebody, I pay them, and then when they do something wrong, then you come back and get me. So you make it so I can't do it, and then blame me when somebody else does it wrong. With that being said, a lot of lawyers make a lot of money trying to figure out the tax code. A lot of accountants make a lot of money trying to figure out the tax code. If I were able to one day fill out my income taxes on a 3x5 card, like Ronald Reagan said, wouldn't you put out a business, a whole lot of accountants, and a whole lot of lawyers.
Oh, what a pity.
Well, I mean, they have lobbyists too, though.
Yeah, but that's just a net drag on the economy, and it's a huge net drag to have people go through all of this cost simply to comply with a law that, frankly, no one understands.
That's a lot of capital loss.
I agree.
It's a dead weight loss to society.
I clearly agree. Let's talk about chess for just a moment. You are a huge chess fan.
Yes.
Where did you learn how to play chess?
My Uncle Fred taught me to play chess when I was 13 years old, and the second game we played, I beat him, and I am still feeling a little guilty about that. I was on the Bishop de Burgh chess team, and I was always interested and fascinated, and I played my first tournament chess game in 1973, and I played tournament chess through 85, stopped playing because my kids were growing, tournaments were on evenings and weekends, and I traveled a lot for business, so at that point, I read my wife, her Miranda rights, and I said, look, when the kids are grown, I'm going back into tournament chess, and you can't complain when I do, and I have gone back into tournament chess.
You've also turned St. Louis, if not now, soon to be the world epicenter of chess, right?
It's remarkable what has happened in St. Louis. It's unbelievable. No one could have forecast it. We have Webster College, Susan Pogar, former women's world champion, grandmaster. She brought the team from Texas Tech. That is the highest. It's the number one team in all of Pan America, North and South America. Lindenwood College is going to try to build the same kind of chess team through scholarships, and they're doing it quickly. In fact, I'll tell you a quick story. The recruiter from Lindenwood was over in Azerbaijan about 3 months ago talking to four high school students, all international masters already, which is the second highest title in the world. And he said, have you ever heard of Lindenwood College? They said, nope. He said, have you ever heard of the St. Louis Chess Club? They said, yeah, it's the world mecca of chess. So, I mean, this is how fast it has happened. We're almost at 1,000 members at the chess club, paying members, and we've never advertised for membership. And then about a year ago, we got the World Chess Hall of Fame. The U.S. Chess Trust asked us if we would take it over and move it to St. Louis. We agreed, and that is a fascinating place. We've added a lot of art that is motivated by chess to the Hall of Fame, and we change exhibits about every 4 years. And I'm telling folks, you got to go there and see it. You will not believe it. Right now, we have, for example, George Washington's chess set.
Really?
Is on exhibit. And we have the chess board and pieces that were used in the third game of the 72 Fischer-Spassky match. And the board was autographed by Fischer and Spassky. That's on display as well.
You also said on the break that a lot of high schools and schools are starting chess clubs because of this.
Oh, they have that. And our mission at the chess club, we're a 501c3, which means we're a charity. Our mission is really to have an outreach program to children to get them involved in chess. Now, I do have to say, this is a worldwide movement. And the number one leader of this is Garry Kasparov, former world champion. It's pretty clear that if children get into chess, even for a few years, it benefits them enormously in the development of all of their cognitive skills, their judgment abilities, their control of emotions. Chess is the only thing that people, going through school, even through college, it's the only thing you will ever encounter that relies on pure logic. It's the only thing you will ever take, if you take it.
Are you a speed chess fan?
I play speed chess sometimes.
Do you take your queen out too early?
Absolutely not. but you are getting rather personal.
The movie Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Yes.
I thought it was an absolutely fabulous movie, fantastic. It made the dance, it made the chess pieces dance.
Right.
Accurate, not accurate, crazy? Did Hollywood take a lot of liberties with it?
They took some liberties, but it's based on a real person,
right.
Josh Waitzkin, who became an international master. And he wrote a book on how to learn. And after he got out of chess, he took up Taekwondo and became the world champion.
He's out of chess now? He doesn't play chess anymore?
I don't think he competes actively. But okay. The point is, he became a world champion in another sport, Taekwondo.
Right. Yeah. All right. You've given us helpful hints with our money. Give us a helpful hint with chess.
Play as often as you can. Study. Take lessons. That's the one thing I wish I had done. I take a lesson a week now. My teacher lives in Philadelphia. She is 31 years old. She was twice the U.S. Women's Champion. She wrote a book called Chess Witch, spelled with a B. And her most recent book is Play Like a Girl. And she comes to St. Louis frequently, but my lessons once a week are usually over the internet.
All right. The
and she's beautiful.
The Chess Hall of Fame is in Central West End across from Lester's. What street is that? Is that
That's Maryland.
Maryland, right there.
Right across from the chess club, right next to Starbucks.
Right next to Starbucks. So you can stay up all night and play chess. Rex Singfield, along with policy analyst Patrick Ishmael. Patrick, we need you to talk a little less next time.
You got it, man.
We need to focus on Rex more. Rex, you're always welcome anytime, anywhere, any shape. We'd love to chat with you. You always
Thank
have an
you
interesting point.
Thank you very much.
Patrick, I must say that David Stokes much better than you.
Clearly. Yeah, but it goes without saying, though.
Clearly.
Really?
All right, 9:50. We'll come back, wrap things up on the Big 550 KTRS.